You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
You're listening to Creative Quarantine. I'm your host, Angelique Roche. And today, we are a month old. That's right. We hit 1 month, 4 weeks since we started this show. And I couldn't be more excited that whether you just started listening or you've been listening and watching for a month, that we have continued to have some amazing conversations with amazing creatives while inspiring and being real and talking about some very real things that are happening around the country right now as folks are taking a step back and adjusting to being quarantined, to being self-isolated, and also readjusting how they think about their creative process or being very thankful for their creative process and how they work and how they're able to continue to create because that is who they are. Today, we had an incredible guest, someone that I have been watching for years, a really funny comedian, Kevin on stage, who honestly, the first time I ever saw Kev, I had seen some reaction videos, my friends had shared stuff been popping up in friends' timelines, and I'd seen a couple suggestions, and this really funny guy that was reacting to a internet video, which is something Kev still does, but he has created this incredible brand around his specific, very true to himself comedy that includes great dad jokes, unpopular opinions, best worst advice, and also some really cool sketch comedy, as well as some work with his amazing wife, who you should also check out. One in particular video that I am loving right now is Yoga Fails. It's currently on Kev's Instagram, so definitely go check that out. And we had an incredible conversation about his journey as an artist, where it started, how it started, starting off in stage writing and screenwriting, and his hopes and dreams for being able to produce and put out content, and how he was very successful at being unsuccessful in the early days while being successful. Trust me, you'll get it. Listen to the conversation. But I think he also gives some really great advice to folks who are content creators, who are looking to continue doing content, whether it's digital, stage, screen, however you want to make it, and how folks can get started and stay dedicated, and kind of what the secret sauce really is, which ain't that much of a secret, about what it takes to get to a point where you feel like you are quote unquote successful in creating content. Honestly, if you can't tell by this introduction, it was a great conversation. We had a lot of laughs. We brought a lot of joy. We stayed real. That is what the kids say these days, right? And we even talked about TikTok. So, you know what? Like I always say, I enjoyed the conversation. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. You are watching Creative Quarantine, and it's Monday. We made it to another Monday, and I am here with, how do I introduce you? Content creator, producer, writer, dad joke maker, best worst advice husband. Giver.
Father, husband, friend.
Boom. Kev, on stage. What's up, Kevin?
Oh, it worked.
Yeah, we did it. It only took like 5 minutes of practice to figure out which direction to do it in. Oh man, how are you doing?
You know what? I think the best way to put it is I am making the most of it. I think a friend of mine, Lovey, said she talked to her therapist about, you know, she feels like she's either going to sink or swim during this, you know, pandemic. And her therapist said, "What if you just float?" And I feel like that's the approach I've been taking. Like, I tend to make things doom and gloom anyway. Like, what if no one ever laughs at a joke? What if I can never sell a ticket again? What if my arms fall off? Like, literally, like, just utterly ridiculous stuff. And I think this is a perfect example of something that's completely out of all of our control. And we just, all we can try to do is make the most of it. I think that's all we can really ask of ourselves is to try to get through this.
Are we talking about the infamous Lovey side eye from Chicago?
Yeah.
So we've known each other for a couple years. And one of the things I love about Lovey, besides Lovey's sneaker collection, which just makes me jealous, is that that's really like, there's like a real, I the Kerr commentary from the last couple of weeks has been spot on.
It's been great.
Just because I know, and of course you know how hard she works.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it's really interesting to talk about this whole idea of floating, specifically as a content creator, because a lot of folks know you from like one aspect of what you do, right? Like, we were kind of chatting before we went live. I love your dad jokes. Best worst advice is my new favorite thing. But you podcast, Unpopular Opinion, you had a comedy show coming up, and you've been doing a lot of expansion.
Right.
And so this is kind of like one of those things where it's different than someone who is just on a show and the show stopped production. You are the show and you are the production. And so what has kind of been that initial adjustment for you? Just saying, yo, we're going to stop this. So we got to sit still.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, I was just watching, I remember I was supposed to go to this Black Twitter thing, and that was the first event that got canceled. And I was in Tampa getting ready to prepare for a show, and I was supposed to go to New York the next day. And then it got canceled. It was like my first, due to an abundance of caution because of COVID-19, that was the first time that something got canceled. I was like, oh man, my first thought was Twitter is taking this very seriously. Good for them, right? And you know, and then my son had a soccer tournament that week. And I was like, oh, cool. I'll get to go to my son's soccer tournament. I'll spend a week at home. Then I'll go back out on the road. That was the last time that I was out of town. And that was in the beginning of March. That was like March 7th or 8th or something like that. So luckily for me, I say luckily because it was really needed. I make content and therefore income in a lot of different ways. And because of this, you know, pandemic, it's really given me an opportunity to spend a lot of time with my family, more than I usually get to do from being on the road and having meetings. Because it's like, not only am I not performing out of town, like all my shows that I do in LA, like the podcast and other video content I make, even that stuff's not, you know, shooting. It's like, and there's no meetings. I was taking a lot of meetings and developing stuff for TV. All that stuff is gone. So I'm able to bother my kids at record amounts of interactions. I mean, you guys only see the dad jokes that I post. They are the test. They get the god awful ones that I don't even laugh at myself. So, you know, I've been taking this time to help build my wife's YouTube channel up, things like that. And I'm just trying to, you know, it's like goulash. You really are just trying to take the best of what we have and make the most of it.
And I think that's interesting. I'm glad you shouted out your wife because you are a creative household. Like, folks, there are folks who just know your wife, and there's folks who just know you. And then there's folks who see yoga fails and they're like, who are these people? but, you know, you really are this like really creative powerhouse family situation happening.
Yeah.
You know, for a lot of folks who may have just like jumped on, because there's some folks who've been on the bandwagon for years, right? Who've been following you. And there's other folks who kind of, and we were talking about this, I started seeing your work because people would forward me your reactions. And I want to talk about a couple reactions later, specifically these Corona gospel reactions. I was specifically asked to ask about that. But how, you know, what's and I work with superheroes a lot, so I love asking this question, like, what's your origin story? Like, a lot of people know you're a military brat, but like, how does one fall into being this like diverse content creator / stand-up comedian / dad joke teller?
You know what? Honestly, I've never really thought about it like this until you asked me. I think my internet story was born out of necessity and lack. Mm. So I started off making plays with my brother and friend. The first thing I did was stand up, and I just did it in high school for fun on a dare. And I just played around with that, but I never kind of looked at it as a career, so to speak. I thought, you know, I was going to be like Tyler Perry and make plays. And we were in Seattle, Washington, making plays and, you know, doing great, but very far from actually making a living. And I remember we had got this guy who had either booked Tyler Perry, promoted Tyler Perry. We had flew him out to Washington. And, you know, it was like, if he liked this play, we were going to make it. So we flew him out. He loved the play. He was like, all right, now you guys got to put it up in Oakland for 2 days. And I'll show that to Tyler. And I don't even know if he knew Tyler, but I was gullible. And and we're like, okay, how much does that cost? And he was like, it's about 300 grand to do a weekend of shows. And we were like, you might as well have been 300 bazillion. Like, it just, we had raised $40,000 from one investor, and that was the most money in the world we'd ever even talked about. We lost all his money. We broke even, but we didn't make any money.
Yeah.
Second time we raised $20,000 from another investor, broke even again, but didn't make a profit. Now you're talking about raising $300,000. So we were literally going to quit and just coach our kids in basketball. At this time, all of our kids were on the same basketball team. And I saw, you know, I was watching a lot of YouTube. I was working at Boeing at this time, and I'd seen a lot of YouTubers like making a living doing YouTube. So I was like, what if we just make YouTube videos? Like, maybe since we can't travel our plays from Seattle, because all the popular black plays like Tyler and David E. Talbert and Jacarius Johnson, they all lived in the South, and they would run from, you know, Atlanta to Charlotte and to Texas and everywhere in between, Chicago, and you could make a living. But from Seattle, you couldn't even drive to a black, like the closest black population was Oakland. Yeah. And that was a 12-hour drive. And we didn't have that type of money or anything like that. So the internet for us was like a way to get more people to see us so that maybe we could do our plays. And there was I'll never forget, there was a trend going on, Stuff Girls Say was going on. And we did Stuff Black Parents Say and Stuff Black Church Girls Say. And we asked our wives to be the girls in the video, and they said no. So we put wigs on. This is way back. Put wigs on, and both those videos went viral. And from that moment on, we just kept going. So the reason I started the Kev on Stage page is because on our Playmakers page, all we made was church girls or church-based videos, which were going viral. But I was like, I want to talk about other stuff that's funny to me that might not be church-based. So I started Kev on Stage, my own YouTube page, and I proceeded to make content, and I just never looked back. For like the last 8 years, I've posted a video, at least one video a day for 8 years.
Wow. Wow. And that's
More than one video a day, but at least, I mean, I might miss a day, but I've done 365 videos a year or more every year.
Which is so interesting, because when you think of the span of 8 years, right, and you think of, for those of us who really understand the evolution of the internet, like and understanding what was accessible to us. Like right now, people got diva lights and selfies, and they're working with these HD phones, and they've got their Canon Rebels and all these other things that are happening, and like everything's Bluetooth enabled. But 8 years ago,
man,
that was not, like, editing was not the same. You did not have this editing software, and it really speaks to trends. No, I was about to say, go ahead.
I worked at Boeing, and it was like getting a job at the Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Like, they didn't hire anybody. They hadn't hired anybody in this program in 5 years. And they hired five people on one program and then two people in my wife's program. I used to sneak to my car on an iPod Touch and record a video in my car and then go back to work and then go home and edit it later. And I would sneak into empty conference rooms and shoot videos. I had a Canon Rebel T3i, was the most legit. I mean, I was Steven Spielberg, Martin Scorsese with that. It had a flip, you know, a flip finder.
Flip screen, yep.
Oh my gosh. That thing was $700. And I was like, we gotta make it. But you're right. It is so, and it's funny because people complain, like, you know, I can't make content. It's literally, almost all of my videos are right here, shot, edited, posted. Right before we did this, I shot two videos. I edited my videos with my left hand while I was eating cereal with my with my right. So
how's that shoulder doing though? How's
you know what's funny? I just texted my wife right before I got on with you. I forgot to take my medicine. It is killing. I fell down the stairs and dislocated my shoulder on Saturday or Friday. And I still had to shoot podcasts with my shoulder throbbing. Like it takes an insane amount of dedication to do it. And that's usually the biggest separator between people who make it and people who give up. It's how willing are you to just keep going in the face of like no views? Because my first videos, man, I have 78 views, 64. And I was like, we are this close to 100. You know?
That's all I need. All I need is 100 to motivate me to the next 100. It's it.
And this is why on my other page, every video was getting 1 million. Like I was really dedicated to breaking 100. And then once I broke 1,000, I was like, you might as well. And then once I became a YouTube partner, each milestone I enjoyed, you know, along the ride. So it's been a great journey. So far, it's been super great.
Well, I love it, right? Because it speaks to this level of adaptability and this level of just, there is this dedication, right? Of studying the platforms, of understanding their shifts. Because I'm sure I've been working in digital media for 6-7 years on. And every time the algorithm changes, it changes every single thing you have to do.
Absolutely.
And every single way you put stuff out there. For you, like, has there been a secret sauce? Has there been something? And, you know, don't share too much because you have a masterclass and I want people to, hey, this man, this is expert knowledge. This is not for free. But if there's anything that you would like to offer, just kind of as folks are out there who are content creators, right? Like who wake up and have ideas and want to create content and tell a story.
Sure. I think two things. One, use the internet to your benefit. Whatever your lane is, capitalizing on trends is the easiest way for people to become aware of you. So if you are a chef, it's, you know, everyone in the world is talking about coronavirus and quarantine. So is it smart to say, I'm just going to make a ham? Or is it smart to say, quarantine meals to get you through? Or let me teach you how to make a meal with things that you have in your house. If you are a comedian and you want to talk about a show, everybody in the world was watching the Clark Sisters on Saturday night or RZA vs. Primo or Insecure. Like, if you have those things, talk about those things because that's what everybody's talking about. And that's a good way to get people in your funnel. But the deep, dark secret that nobody wants to believe is the truth. Consistency is the most important tool. People buy my masterclass and they want it to be something that this is really the thing. And listen, I have been doing this every single day. Even when I went on tour, this was my third year in a row on tour, still shooting videos every day. And I'm so glad I did. I mean, editing them on the plane, posting them right before takeoff, you know, buying Wi-Fi on an international flight just to make sure I could post it right. You know what I'm saying? Like the dedication and hard work and consistency that's what separates people. There's really no, I can give you the tools, but I can't make you decide to get up and make a video when you have a migraine or you just lost your job or whatever and you just don't feel like it today, or you had 6 videos in a row that stunk it up, or the algorithm switched and you used to get, you know, a lot more thousands of views, now you get less, or you have to learn what pops on TikTok. Like, you know, you kind of have, there's a lot of that that's really important, but consistency and hard work is the difference maker. People can blow up quickly, but they very rarely stay successful. You know what I mean? The internet, think about all the viral videos of people you've seen over your life that people haven't been able to make a career off of it, you know, or people who've had three months or a year. Like the internet is a lot like one hit wonders. There's a lot of songs, you know, from one band or one person, but that's it. You know what I mean? It's like, what are you going to continue to do to keep pushing yourself forward?
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of truth in the consistency part. Cause I think there's also this idea that not everybody's a content creator.
No, not at all.
I mean, unpopular opinion, all puns intended, like not everybody is made out to be a content creator. And that doesn't make anyone good or bad or less creative or not creative at all. But like in the pace that we are looking at today, like I started off in journalism, right? Mm-hmm. So journalism however many years ago that I got a college degree, was much different than the journalism that we deal with now, right?
Yeah,
like, that journalism, the news came out once a day. Maybe there was an evening edition if you lived in a big enough space and they had just invested in websites.
Right.
Now, you can't find a newspaper that doesn't have a website and a subscription and isn't constantly trying to put out the latest news and give updates to draw to traffic to the website. For you, though, do you feel like there's a drive to still get back to traditional forms of creativity, like doing a stage play, looking at, you know, more appointment type television? Or is this kind of like your sweet spot?
You know, I think part of me at first, I did want to do that. Right. But then I realized, like, to be a traditional actor, you have to deal with an untraditional amount of rejection. Like, the audition process alone, it is just tough to break in so many no's, you know? So at first I'm like, I want to be traditional, but traditional is changing. You know, I'm like, my children, 13 and 11, they have never in their life said, my show comes on at 7 o'clock. I need to be sitting in front of the TV at 7 o'clock to watch it. They are used to saying, okay, I want to watch this guy on YouTube, so let me go to his YouTube page and see what he's posted. Or, Dad, what's the login to Disney Plus? Because there's a show I want to watch. Or what's the Hulu? Like, can you log into Netflix for me? So it's like, why go back in time? Because the people who are going to be consumers moving forward, they're used to following people online. And that's one of the reasons I do TikTok, is because my son's soccer team, the 11-year-olds, 10-year-olds, they love TikTok. And they're about the age I was when I fell in love with Will Smith. Now, I couldn't buy a ticket to a show or movie at the time, but I've been a fan of his my whole life. So when I could go see Bad Boys 2, I willingly did it because I had so many fun memories of the Fresh Prince and then, you know, Men in Black. So I want to have the current, you know, fans that are my age. That's the majority of my fan base. But I also want to be introducing myself into people who are 11 and 15 and 20. And that's kind of the reason why I had to learn TikTok, because I was vehemently against it. But TikTok kids are not coming to YouTube. You know what I mean? Like, my son's friends, they're not finding my content on YouTube. They're on YouTube, but they're watching video game playthroughs and things like that. So,
yeah.
You know, with the internet, you kind of always got to be going with the flow and making sure you can do something relevant as the internet changes.
Yeah. And I think that's such an interesting point, because, you know, when you look at things like, because TikTok basically is the new Vine. I know aging that for a lot of people are like, Vine, what's Vine? but like, TikTok is a new Vine, but also, you know, when you look at things like Quibi, which understands is adapting to 10-minute shows, which is crazy to some of us,
right?
That things would be that episodic. But if you look back and you go Issa Rae, Awkward Black Girl, that structure was already on its way. And those fans who watched Awkward Black Girl were the first fans to get caught up in Insecure, right? Because they were like, anything that Issa does, we're there, right?
Exactly.
And so I think that's such an awesome point. And it's so interesting because, I did go see The Last Bad Boys, mainly because I love Will Smith.
Right.
Because I was expecting anything out of the movie.
Exactly. And that's what we do as creators. Like, I remember watching the first episode of Insecure. My friend was like, you've got to check this YouTube show out. It's hilarious. And that was like seven, eight years ago, like way, way, way back then. And now Issa commands more than, you know, say, you know, Josephina Blow on the street, who has the similar idea to Insecure, but isn't Issa Rae, doesn't have a web following, doesn't have 300,000 YouTube subscribers. At least that personality can, you know, if the network's choosing between one of these two people, they always want to give their show the best shot. And Issa is the writer, creator, star, and she already brought some audience. And some online shows are getting more audience than traditional media. Some podcasts are doing numbers that TV shows would love to do. You know what I mean? So it's like, I don't see the point in chasing something when I already have something of value right in front of me.
Yeah. Well, we have a question. I want to make sure everybody knows you can ask questions live. All of it comes into the comments box over here where we're at. So don't worry, in the comments, in the chat, everywhere, we'll pick it up. Could you ask Kev what his next major goal is? Could you ask him to explain what that visualization looks like? That's a real deep question, but it's a good question.
It's a great question. I think my next major goal is to expand what we do into long form content. We're currently writing a movie for Tony Baker and I, a friend of mine, comedian, and I mean, overall super talented person, actor and all that. And instead of pitching it to Hollywood, we're going to write it, shoot it, make it, and sell it to our audience directly. And it's like, you know, whether that makes $500 or $500,000, that's what I think the model is for me, is to be able to create and produce my own content. And then eventually create and produce content for, or actually produce and uplift other creators. You know, people who can't get in traditional Hollywood but have a great script. I want Kev on Stage Studios to be able to say, hey, man, you got a great script. We love it. You know, we're going to produce it for you. We're going to share in the revenue and things like that. I think that's what our space will be before the traditional media. Now, of course, if somebody wants to make a TV show or a movie for me, I'd love to do it. But one thing I've always loved about owning this, our stuff, is the control. You can't cancel a show. You can't cancel my show if I'm producing it. You know, like, I can cancel it. There's shows that I love that I had to discontinue because they weren't, you know, business. They didn't make business sense anymore. But you can't say, oh, you know, this show's canceled. I don't want to make this anymore. And then, like, my whole life is ruined. I love the freedom and power being my own creator gives me. You know what I mean? Because my audience loves it. And I only have to really please my audience and then hope my audience grows. But I can make a great living just doing what I'm doing now. So I just want to expand that. That's my hope.
And I love that, because it's one of the things that a lot of folks miss in all of this is the business aspect. And like for you, there really is. And we were talking about this before we went live. Like, the reason why I love your stuff so much, besides it is funny and it's good content, you can really tell that there is a sense of content development. There's a higher level. It's not just putting good stuff out there. It's putting good stuff out there that, you know, this is Kev's stuff. Like, you know, Kev on Stage did this. You know, Kev on Stage is known for a certain style of comedy, a certain tone of video. And it's more than just you being yourself. Like, when you really look at it, you can tell that you listen to your audience. For folks out there, like, as they're thinking about that, like, where does that strategy start from? How do you think in terms of audience?
Well, I think the first thing I wanted to do was be authentic to myself and make what I thought was funny and put that out there and then draw people who are like me. So, you know, if you're a fan of mine, you probably grew up in the 90s. You like 90s R&B. You're highly likely to be grew up in a black church. You know, you think 90s R&B is better than today's music. You know what I mean? Things like that. So that was the black church was my first audience. And then it's just, what do I think is funny? Like, obviously, there was a period of time on Instagram where most of the people that were growing, they were putting women in their videos that were barely dressed and focusing on their boobs and butt, right? And I saw people go from thousands followers to a million in a year doing that. And I was like, I just am never going to do that. My wife's never going to allow me. I just couldn't, you know what I mean? Like, I couldn't be fake to myself to attract followers, because I knew that wasn't really how I saw content. So I had to watch people, you know, pass me by doing stuff that I didn't feel comfortable doing. But I knew that if I stuck to what I thought was real and valuable and funny and not funny, then the people would rock with me. And I feel like it's better to have somebody who really supports you and, you know, wants to come to a show or buys a shirt or buys a mug or shares a podcast. It's better than grabbing somebody who's just, you know, saw a girl twerking and now they're following you hoping for more of that, because that's not, you know, it's like, that's to me selling out. It's like doing something that, you know, you don't believe in only for either monetary value or to gain followers was like, I'd rather have 200,000 or 2,000 people who really rock with me and know what I'm about than 2 million people who, you know, are following me off of some, you know, persona I created that really isn't me. So that's why people are like, I feel like I know you, Kev. I'm like, for the most part, you do. I mean, you know, the the stuff I be saying is what I really be thinking, you know. I mean, it's more a performative version of myself. I'm not like this all the time when I'm at home, just, you know, digging in my toes, watching The Office like most people. But
but it's funny because it's true.
So, you know, like, but for the most part, you do really know me because that's I put my thoughts out.
And I think that is it's such a statement on sustainability, right? And I think that also goes back to like how you have been able to adjust in this time, because it wasn't like you were completely adjusting the type of like this is the same content you were putting out. It's just limitations and restrictions of where you can go. Yeah. One of the things I think a lot of people do ask, and reminder, you can ask questions right now. And this is such an interesting, you touched on it about the phone. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think that you got to have this big, huge space. You got to have all this studio stuff and all this equipment to get started. Like, I'm guessing literally you got like a headphone, maybe a phone lav and like a phone, and that's life.
Not even a lav.
Phone tripod.
I've got a monopod like this, right? And it has a cell phone clip on it. And I take my cell phone and I put it in like this.
Boom.
And 90% of the videos that I shoot are done just like this. No external mic, no lav. I have some lights now, but before I could afford lights, I would go to the window in my house where the sun was shining. And the key is have the light behind you, whether it's bought or sunlight, put it behind the camera, stand in front of it. Like, and if the sun went down, then I'd go to the most well-lit part of my house, or I'd go in my car and turn on the thing. Like, you with Anchor FM, you can record a podcast and edit it on your phone. You know what I mean? So, and if you can't afford the phone, I spent, the first piece of equipment I bought was an iPod Touch. I bought it for my son, and then when he wasn't playing with it, I would shoot it and edit it. So I edit most of my stuff in there. We actually still shoot most of our podcasts on our iPhone because it's clear, it's good backup audio, and it's easy to transfer the footage to our computer. You just airdrop it, and then it stays in the cloud. Like, we have really nice cameras and stuff, but man, it's really not as hard as it used to be. You know, we used to have the memory cards and daylight bulbs and like all this stuff, you know, like, and you know, that stuff has its place, but it's not when you get started. People will watch a grainy video if they like the content creator. Some people can have a red camera, top line audio, visuals, RE kit. If you ain't talking about nothing interesting, it doesn't matter how beautiful it is and how great it sounds. You ain't talking about nothing.
Right.
You just ain't talking about nothing very clearly and visually pleasing.
Yeah, I mean, aesthetic nothing? Is that a thing?
Aesthetic nothing. You have a beautifully aesthetic nothing. So, like, even StreamYard is so great. Like, I know the world's going to get better, but I might use StreamYard for, you know, I just started using it like 3 days ago. I love this program. You know what I'm saying? So
we've shot, this is show 17, 16? Show 16 on here?
Wow. See? You live and learn.
We're in week 4 on StreamYard. Shout out to StreamYard. So that's interesting, because I wanted to hop over to how you decide on your content. Speaking of things that are hooked onto what's happening right now with COVID-19, you've got two videos that literally I couldn't breathe after watching them, because I was like, somebody, everything you joke about, all your reactions, the Dear Kevins, the videos, they're all real. And that's the thing I love about comedy. And we have a week of comedians this week. But one of the things I think I want to just nail in over and over again, you're making fun of and talking about and cracking jokes on real things.
Yeah.
Real life. I.e. gospel corona music.
Corona be gone. yes. I try to never be malicious with my comedy, so that, you know, if the person who posted that or a person who's the subject in that video sees it, is like, all right, man, that's fair. You know, like, I was tripping, or that is funny. Like, I never want to attack people. You know, people are going to get offended at everything, because you know, especially in the church, every video is funny until it's your pastor or a pastor you know. Then it's all, oh, my man, it's a my man of God, and it ain't funny. Like, it's always someone. So I try not to ever be malicious, but man, then some of the stuff is just ludicrously funny. And people mean well. They mean well, but that is, and the funny part is I am the subject of my own jokes. I don't even let myself off the hook. I fell down the stairs and dislocated my shoulder. And the painters who were painting my house laughed so hard. And I was like, the game's the game, man. Falling is funny. Even if you are the faller, I can't be mad, because if he would have fell down the stairs, I would have laughed at him. I mean, come on. My legs were straight up in the air. As a man, 6 foot, 250 pounds, falling down multiple stairs. Like, I went around the corner. It had to be hilarious to see that. You know what I mean? So the game is the game.
I mean, but how do you, like, for a lot of folks, it's, like, very interesting, right? This whole concept of finding the video. Because it's one of those moments where it's like, I never would have found... And I'm on the internet. We're on the interwebs a lot.
Right.
There are a lot of things on the interwebs. Yeah. But these two particular videos, the man had caught the spirit. Singing about Corona, Begona. And I feel like there was more than one version.
Man. Last week, there was like three of those. You know what? I go on Twitter every morning like most people. And I just scroll. And they're... is never a day when I don't find something. I usually think if I see a piece of content, video or a tweet, and if I can think of three funny things to say about it, I'll make a joke. And the thing that I've realized about the internet is relatability is more important than comedy, right? If I say something like my video today was about this guy had said, women, you're wearing that same bra every day. Don't you think it's time to change into a new one? And I was like, bro, do you know a real woman? They're wearing a bra. What are you even talking about, right? Because my wife is like, nah, we off that. You know what I mean? So I know that more women, like, oh, they don't be wanting to wear bras. They wear bras because society makes you. They frowns upon not wearing them. But at home, on the weekend, if I'm finna go nowhere, are you crazy? And more women are like, exactly. And people... you know, if they agree with the sentiment, they're more likely to comment and share. And if that sentiment also happens to be funny, you know, and this is how you beat the algorithm. When people are tagging their friends or sending it to their friends, it doesn't matter what the algorithm says. If you think it's funny, Angelique, and you send it to your homegirl, there's nothing the algorithm can do about that. Nope. You know what I mean? So, I mean, of course, I guess technically it could decide whether you see it, but if people are going to my page and searching my name, finding a video, and then sending that to their friend and looking for my stuff, then it's algorithm free. So I look for stuff that makes me laugh, stuff that's relatable. Like, I saw a video, and I didn't even make a video about it. This family was doing a TikTok challenge where they were doing the shimmy, and it got to two little brothers, and they just started fighting at the end. When I tell you, I literally laughed for 20 minutes. It was so me and my older brother.
Yeah, it's relatable. I have two nephews. I love them to death, man. But every once in a while,
they just gotta throw hands.
Just throw hands. No reason.
Especially the younger one. The younger one got. I'm about this. I'm gonna fight you. Might just be so tall, you know.
But
right. But. So yeah. So that's what I look for: relatability. What's funny to me? Because some videos are funny to me and not funny to others. Some videos I think I just did okay. People find them the most hilarious ever. And that's kind of another thing. Like, I kind of make it, shoot it, and post it before I can talk myself out of it. Because I'm a creator and I'm sensitive about my work. And I, you know, so many times I've made
overthink it.
I'll post something, then think about a funnier joke, or somebody in the comments will make a funnier joke than anything I said. I'm like, I'm not funny no more. You know what I mean? But I just make it and get it up before I talk myself out of it, because I'm an artist and I'm sensitive about my stuff too, like Erykah Badu said.
I mean, look, man, that's one of the ways I tricked myself into is we do a live stream. There's no, it's up.
It's up.
It's up. It's out.
That's so true. You can't go back.
Nothing I can do about it.
It's already made.
We have a comp. Oh, okay, Lou. Okay, Lou. Oh, man.
Lou, the answer is no. The question is, you have to ask Kev if Tony ever forgave him about Anita Baker. The answer is no. He has softened his stance. So if you don't know this story, I didn't know about Anita Baker specifically growing up because, listen, Angelique, listen. My family only let us listen to gospel music. Okay.
Okay.
Now, I actually realized I heard her sing with the Winans, but nobody ever said this is Anita Baker. She also makes this album. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I grew up, I heard her songs, but I couldn't say this is Anita Baker song. We listened to that. So my wife, this is about 2 years ago now, Spice Adams, another funny content creator, he posted, he used to use Anita Baker clip every time he would make fun of somebody. So my wife was listening to Anita Baker, and I was like, oh, that's that Spice Adams clip. And she was like, you don't know who this is? And I was like, no, it's the lady from Spice Adams. So she blew up my spot. You don't know Anita Baker? And the blacks were up in arms. So you know what I did, Angelique? I said, I'm going to learn. You know, I downloaded all her music. I listened to it, loved it. You know, listened to Rapture.
It's Anita Baker.
Flawless, timeless. Then here's why he got mad. I said, you know what? She's doing her farewell concert series. I'm going to take my wife to D.C. because my wife had never seen her live. Bought me and my wife tickets to the concert. We're sitting on the floor in the back, not in the front. And we're standing up, clapping, singing. And Anita Baker's like, hey, Kev, I love what you're doing, young man. She follows me on Twitter, invited me backstage. I got to meet her and take a picture with her. And I posted it. And that's what made Tony mad. He's like, you a fraud. You just found out about her. And now you got to meet her. Like, you could have went to the concert. You could have bought tickets. And it was one of the best concerts I've ever been to in my entire life. I mean, she was amazing. And he just felt like I didn't deserve that. But, you know, favor ain't fair.
Sometimes it really and truly is not. It really and truly is not.
So that's why he's never forgiven me. And he won't forgive me until he gets to meet her backstage. And...
That might not happen, unfortunately.
That's not my problem, bro. That's not my problem.
But that actually brings up another good point that I love, particularly like in this moment. There is this huge collective, and not huge, but I mean, there is a collective of folks that you work with, right?
Yeah.
Like you have folks that you collaborate with. You have folks you were on tour with. There's even like a social media comedian influencer tour situation. Y'all podcast together, like folks that, you know, like all these different folks that you will see on different channels. I love seeing just pop up on each other's videos because it seems so isolated when you're only following one or you're only following another. Talk to me a little bit about how a lot of the collaborations come about, but also like, I don't think folks know that behind the scenes, y'all strategize together.
Absolutely. So I was watching a lot of Joe Rogan and Theo Vaughn and Brendan Schaub, because these guys, they just totally kill in the podcast lane. Chris D'Elia, Whitney Cummings, you know, Bobby Lee. And I'm like, how are they so successful? And obviously one of the things is they've been podcasting for a long time. Joe Rogan and them 8 to 10 years, most of them. Yeah. But also they often show up in each other's content. And that does two things. It introduces each other, you know, each person to each other's audience. And two, those episodes tend to be funnier because when you're around your friends, things are just funnier than when you're by yourself. Like me with one of my friends is a great time. Me with eight of my friends, it's a blast. So I told my guy, I said, man, we've got to collaborate. Like we need to make a strategic effort to be on each other's podcast more and just support each other and make each other's videos because we'll make better content and we'll all grow. We'll all rise together. And this quarantine has actually helped that because we're all available and at home. Usually my friends, we're on the road. We're flying in at different times. We're all using, you know, most of my comic friends, we land on Monday morning, scramble, spend time with the family. You got basically Tuesday and Wednesday are the only full days you have in LA to do everything. Spend time with your family, shoot your own podcast, go to the doctor. But because of coronavirus, we all sitting at home, digging in our toes, watching The Office. So we're like, yo, let's hop on mine. I'll hop on yours. Like even your thing today, like on a regular day, I probably wouldn't have been able to do this depending on where I'm, just because I usually don't even get home till around this time. And I'm usually crashing because I'm, you know what I mean? So And then Tuesday, I'm shooting all day long. So I only really have Wednesday and Friday. And if you had guests booked on Wednesday and Friday, I'm out of luck. So now we're the best of friends and I can come do your stuff all the time. So I'm just trying to take advantage of where we are right now, as opposed to being like, because just like everybody, the first couple of weeks, I was just like, man, woe is me. What are we going to do? But quickly, I was like, we got to do something because this is not changing anytime soon. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to just be like sitting around eating, which is what I'm going to do anyway. But at least I should shoot after.
I was going to say, nothing's wrong about sitting around and eating.
Summer might be canceled for 2020. So summer bodies are definitely postponed indefinitely. I've got no reason to work out. The people in my house are fine with my body. I don't have nothing to prove to no one.
You heard it here. We have canceled all summer bodies. Live your life.
Live your life.
Oh man, but I love that because it's such a spirit of like, look, I get it. We're in a situation, but there's a malleability to the creativity. We've got so many tools.
Yeah.
Just on this.
Just on that, man. It's amazing. I feel, you know, it's funny. I think every generation feels like the guy when they had mail on horses, they were like, technology ain't never gonna get any better than this. You understand me? He brought me a mail on a horse. And the guy who first got a note from a raven, he was like, man, the raven brought me. You know what I mean? Like every generation has felt like,
what will they think of next?
What will they think of next? So I'm just like, my kids are doing school in their underwear on their phone, which is something even in our day and age, I would have never imagined that they do in school like this. I went to my son's room and he was like, I'm in class, no pants on. Just
pants hilarious. Are also canceled. Pants are also canceled.
I don't even have, I'm sorry, I don't even have socks on.
Why? Neither do I. I haven't done one show with shoes on. No, not one. Not one. Fake. Y'all don't see it.
That's not necessary. I mean, I probably shouldn't have put my foot up, but I wanted to prove to you that I don't have socks on.
Be free. Oh, but it really is like, it really is really interesting because we are at this point and we have this technology and it is in our hands. You know, for you, what are you cooking anything up new? Please give me more dad jokes. I love dad jokes. Good puns are the best thing ever. The Cold Stone Steve Austin might be my favorite.
Oh, you know what's funny about the dad jokes? So everyone is somebody's favorite and the one they hate the most. Cold Stone Steve Austin was my son actually came up with that. My youngest son, he helps me out. He was the genesis behind Cold Stone Steve Austin. But they're so bad. They are awful. And that's what makes them hilarious. Like, you're so mad at yourself for laughing, but we're all a little corny.
All of us. All right. So we got one more question and then we're going to start wrapping up. Kev, what nuggets were you able to get from when you met Will Smith? Speaking of corny, that man makes corny cool and it's real weird.
You know the difference between me and him? You, I make this look good. That is Will Smith in a nutshell. I didn't get any nuggets from him traditionally. I really just bumped into him at his office. We were pitching or we were meeting his creative team and Will Smith like almost bumped into me and he was eating Fig Newtons. And I was just like, oh my gosh, Will Smith likes Fig Newtons. I think the thing about Will probably came from before I met him. And that is that Will Smith's probably his best skill, better than being a great actor, tall, handsome, athletic. He is so likable. He's just likable. You think he's fun to be around. He was so nice when I met him. And I just want to be likable. Like the only ability more, you know, the only thing more important than ability is likability in this business. So I just want to be like Will in the sense that people want me to do well. They want to watch my movies. They want to watch my interviews. They want the best for me, want to meet me. All that stuff. So that it was just the best.
I love it. Cause you know what? Having a team behind you, and I think this was the other thing we were talking about, and it's a great way to kind of smooth out, is like when you have been doing this for 8 years or even 5 or 3 or 2 years, and you've got that following that you've been really true to, which you mentioned earlier and is very true to you, and it's following you because it's you.
Yeah.
they are kind of rooting for you in a way. Like, I've talked to a couple folks who are big fans of you, and like folks who are like on the meetup page, and they honestly and truly are not just, they don't just enjoy your content. They're like rooting for you, which Absolutely. Is amazing.
That's the best thing ever, because it allows you to grow. It allows you to make mistakes, which the internet doesn't want people to grow. Like, you know, we all are growing and learning. We're learning about what's offensive. You know, some of that stuff is changing, and your true fans allow you to grow in real time, you know? So the stage crew, see Karen Spencer, that's the name of my fans, the name they came up with, you know? So I just appreciate that love and support so much. You know, I don't take any of it for granted, and I'm so grateful to be in the position that I'm in. It's the best.
So what should folks be looking out for? Are there any projects you got coming down the lines, anything you're working on now? And then, you know, tell the folks who may not already know how easy it is to find you, how easy it is to find you.
It's so easy to find me with Kev on Stage. Anywhere you look, Kev on Stage will be there. I have podcasts, The Love Hour on Thursdays on my wife's channel, The Righteous and Ratchet on Wednesdays, Dear Kev, where I give you the best, worst advice on the planet. People write to me serious questions. I don't want to be held responsible for your life's problems, so I give you the worst advice that you'd be a fool to take. And hopefully we'll be shooting a movie later this year, and that'll be coming out soon. So I appreciate any support you can give me. And support comes in many different ways. It could be monetary. It could be from liking and commenting a video and sharing with a friend. And all that stuff is valuable, and I appreciate it all.
Awesome. Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Check back tomorrow. We're going to be with Frank Canlindo tomorrow. Frank's going to kill me for murdering his last name again. I love him to death. He's one of the most talented men ever. I am friends with his family, and he's going to be on here. You might know him from Mad TV. He's an incredible impressionist, but he'll be on tomorrow at 2 on Tuesdays. But I want to say thank you again so much, Kevin. Thank you so
much. Have a great day.
Creative Quarantine is hosted by Angelique Roche. It's produced by Angelique Roche, Sarah Storm, and Matt Storm. Our logo is designed by Aaron Leffler. New streaming episodes are available Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, and Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on angeliqueroche.com/creativequarantine. Podcasts are made available the morning after each live streamed episode, wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and visit us on Instagram at creative.quarantine and Twitter at creativeqtine. Please send this to a friend who needs a little artistic company, and stay at home if you possibly can. We'll see you soon.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.